Welcome back. This week's show with Daniel Ravon of Rainbow Gallery is sponsored by Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery and Sassy Jack Stitchery. Avlia Folk Embroidery you can find at avlia.life. A couple of things to call to your attention. One is the pomegranate collection. Krista West is up to 9 charts now on the in her pomegranate collection. And those are $5 each. They're a simple PDF download, $5 each. And there's some really great designs there, but it's really an economical way to get some really great stitching charts. So check that out. And if you hurry, this has been being the end of the month, but if you hurry, 20% off smallish kits. She describes them as smallish kits with the code Stitch Spring. So in March, that's in March only. So Stitch Spring, all one word, will get you 20% off most of her small kits. And then she has several new designs. She's putting up new designs all the time. So you really want to check back at her website regularly to keep up. But one of her big kits is a series of pincushion coaster designs, carnation, cross, scroll, and star. She also is taking those 4 designs and making it into one sampler, which is a really nice look. Another thing you'll want to look at is her newest embroidery hoop kit, and we just gave one away here a week or so ago on a Wednesday show, Arcadian Rose embroidery hoop kit. It really is beautiful, and that is one to check out. And when you get the hoop kit like that, you get the hoop, the cloth, all the threads, the chart, and a needle. So basically, in one package, you're all set to go. So check that out all at avlia.life. And as I said, keep visiting the site because new stuff going up all the time. And our other sponsor is Sassy Jack Stitchery. And here's a word from Kim.
Sassy Jack Stitchery is happy to be a sponsor of Fiber Talk. We so appreciate all the heart that Gary and team put into their show, and we always look forward to each episode. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for all you do for our needlework world. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant needlework shop located in the mountains of western North Carolina, just north of Asheville. We're in the process of moving our shop to its forever home in a historic folk Victorian on the National Listing of Historic Places, just 3 miles down the road from our current location. While we're moving, you can find us in all our normal online haunts, our website at sassyjackstitchery.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We can't wait to open our doors and welcome you into our new old home. It was always a plan to be in this beautiful old house, and we've invested a huge chunk of our hearts into its renovation. Every renovated board, every push-button light switch, every old porch swing has lovingly, mostly, been placed there with our own hands. It has a wonderful, warm, welcoming feel about the place already, and your stitchy joy and laughter with friends will really make it home for Sassy Jack's. So look for us online for the next few months, as we'll be filling online and phone orders as per usual, and we'll be looking forward to the spring at the Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina. When the time comes, we'll leave the light on for you, just like your mom did when you were a kid, so you'll know it's time to come home. Now on to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, the CEO from Rainbow Gallery, Daniel Ravon. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. This is going to be fun. You guys got caught in kind of the perfect storm there, where you had a skyrocketing demand for threads and a supply chain that was struggling to stay together. It's been, the last year has been a real ride for you, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's been a hell of a ride. We had basically a shutdown that closed our operations, halting manufacturing. All the while, we received orders that were way bigger than we were used to getting. As soon as we sent out an email saying we're shutting down, it just exploded.
Yeah. give me what you got before you leave the room, huh?
Pretty much.
What is it in the supply chain that broke down? Does it go all the way back to the raw materials? Was it shipping or just an ugly combination of everything?
Actually, so it wasn't any of those. We have a decent amount of inventory that could sustain us as far as the raw materials are concerned. It's actually a matter of carding the yarn, the yarn. So we will get a cone of, let's say, Splendor, and there will be thousands of meters on that cone. We have to put, 10 yards on one card, and then we make those cards into packs, and that's ultimately what we sell to the customer. So getting the card, getting the yarn from the cone to the card is our manufacturing process. And so that's really, having the stay-at-home order and not having my people come in to basically run our machines that transfer the yarn onto the cards is basically what stopped. And so we had to rely on what was available.
So you're sitting there with really just a horrible situation. You have all the materials, you just can't get them in a position to ship them out. Oh, that's terrible.
We were just looking for time that we are basically losing every day.
Oh, and shops are just, when is my order coming? Oh, boy. Oh, that's tough.
And then at a certain point, we went through our inventory and then hit that supply chain problem where now getting yarn from Europe or Asia was just taking much longer and we had to adjust on the fly.
So that did eventually catch up with you then.
Absolutely. And
Okay.
we're still seeing the backlash of that.
Still. Oh.
We're trying to basically get back to our inventory levels that we were at before, but the lead times are taking much longer. Sometimes the quality just isn't coming in as well.
Oh, because they're rushing on that end.
Absolutely. And it really just moves up the ladder because I know speaking to a shop owner that their customer is yelling at them. And so then they yell at us and we yell at the mill and just.
Right on down, all the way. Well, that's the thing. I mean, my day job is editing a magazine that covers manufacturing, and I hear about it from everyone, readers, people I interview, the whole bit. It's the same story, and as a manufacturer, you're almost helpless. You're just kind of there at the mercy of. Of everything, and if people would just send us supplies and we could ship them out and get them there in a timely manner, everything would be fine. But it's just tough, and then of course everybody starts to lose patience, and this
Well, and also at a certain point, due to COVID and some not COVID related, people started missing work. So it just became somebody is sick. They don't know if it's COVID. We have to tell them to stay home. Then it ends up being COVID and they're gone for 3 weeks. It's very difficult to navigate, especially in those early months.
On and on. It doesn't end. Well, that's and that's the thing. But then, as we were talking before we started recording, you look at the other side, the positive side of this hobby, and the demand has gone up, the interest has gone up dramatically, and growth. So there's an upside down the road once everybody's able to get the supply chain back on track.
We anticipate for it to be like this for a little while now, and all those things that I mentioned before are definitely good problems to have because the demand is there.
Yeah, it's
And
interesting. 2 years ago, we could have had a conversation about, is this hobby going to survive? Is it going to grow? Is it going to shrink? We could have had a legitimate conversation about that. And now, unfortunately, we had to use COVID to get there. But now I think we're having a conversation about easily about growth and expansion. And
We were for sure worried, 3, 4 years ago, with where things were going. 'Cause the people that knew about it loved it, but that pie was not growing. And so we needed to show the world this hobby.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, because of course, marketing is key. I mean, it's key to any success. And what do you see that this high? I mean, right now we're riding high. Okay, things are going to level off. What do we do? What do you see that helps us reach people who are not aware of the needlework hobby, and in your case, primarily needlepoint, but just the needlework hobby in general? Is there a coming together of industry leaders that says, look, we need to put together a general marketing campaign? Is there something that we can do that expands the visibility?
I think so. I think in prior years, and you know, other industries might be reliant on, let's say, a celebrity endorsing that hobby or whatever it is. And I think something that really just brings the attention to how beneficial this hobby is, both, you know, with your mind, but also just people, it's such a feeling of accomplishment when you do a piece or when you put that piece on the wall. So I think it's really just getting the word out in as many avenues as possible.
Yeah. And easier said than done. Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think what's nice is now with social media and the internet and more people in the industry welcoming that side of things, it's starting to take off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I without a doubt. And we need to find ways to keep telling that story and keep the wheels turning, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, even it's geared more towards women, but men, you know, can gain from it as well. There's so much for, you know, to benefit from.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few of us that we can enjoy it. you stitch, right?
I do. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that work out as you're growing up? Your dad running the company, what, Fleur de Paris and Rainbow Gallery. How does that work out for you? Do you see it growing up as a manufacturing job that you're interested in, or you're interested in needlework, or how does that work in your mind?
So my father only started Fleur de Paris. Mm-hmm. Rainbow Gallery was an acquisition by him and I only a few years ago. But on the Fleur de Paris side, he actually started it with his father when they immigrated from Iran. And so it was something very niche. Not too many people within our circles have ever heard of it or been involved in it. So honestly, as a kid, it was kind of foreign as far as the hobby itself. I mean, we stitched, but it wasn't something that was a big, big part of our lives. And as I got older, and I was the third born of my siblings, and neither of them really got involved in the business. So I kind of was just like, I'm going to delve into it.
Well, it's a neat thing, because that, these days, there are so many instances of family businesses where the children have no interest and they want to go do something else. And so many businesses have just been shut down or sold because you know, to pass it on to your children wasn't an option. And so you saw this as an opportunity to make a career and grow and do something. That's great, because I'm sure your dad's pleased that it's going to continue on.
Absolutely. And it's actually very interesting that you say that, because that's actually the story of Rainbow Gallery. John Chatless, the owner who founded the company, his children did not want to get involved in the business. And so when he was ready to retire, instead of passing it on to his children, he put it up for sale to find a buyer.
And you guys were fortunate enough to land it. Yeah,
absolutely. I think in retrospect, it made sense, because we're both in Los Angeles. We're in the business, or in the industry, I should say. And John basically told Sally at the time, go find me a buyer. And my father and Sally had a relationship that traces back to before I was even born. Mm. And so it was kind of a match made in heaven.
Yeah. And by Sally, we mean Sally London, right?
Yes.
Yes, Sally London.
The wonderful Sally.
Yes, yes. The face of Rainbow Gallery for so long, yes.
She's incredible.
Yep. So adding Rainbow Gallery, what did that do with Fleur de Paris? Fill out? Was it a significant extension, or was it a filling out of the offerings to the hobby?
So when we first did the acquisition, and technically even till today, they're two separate companies. However, when we first took over, we continued to operate separate headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And about, I think, 3 years it's now been, we combined the spaces. We bought a property in Burbank, and there's a large warehouse and a large office, and we have both companies operating out of the same building.
Mm, okay. But, so now it really some efficiencies there then.
Yeah, there's for sure, especially on the office side, because Rainbow Gallery, about 80% of the employees are warehouse or manufacturing. And so Rainbow Gallery, when we combined the offices, was able to utilize Fleur de Paris's resources when it came to the office side of things.
Right.
So whether that's the social media or the marketing or something as simple as a large Xerox machine.
Yeah, that can be important. Yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, a lot of the salespeople that work for Fleur de Paris are all stitchers, and Sally is a good stitcher as well. So there was a lot of collaboration when it came to the needlepoint side of things. We would take canvases from Fleur de Paris and stitch rainbow threads onto it, or use it to market, you know, our rainbow cards on a Fleur de Paris design.
Mm-hmm. So you have your own built-in R&D then?
Exactly.
That's great. Research and development with needle and thread. Can't beat that.
No, you can't.
Yeah, yeah. What's the manufacturing like? Fairly modern equipment? Because you're doing a lot of braiding and that. Do you do a lot of raw manufacturing, or is it really just taking shipments in of cones and putting them on cards?
So it's two-pronged. We do have about 6 or 7 lines that's raw manufacturing. And so a line like Silk Lame, where we'll take silk and metallic and braid it together. We have German braiding machines that mix the yarn for us before we even get to the carding side of things. And so those machines that do the braiding are pretty modern. When we took over, we purchased 3 more machines because our demand for those threads were growing. We were coming out with more colors for those lines. We came out with a few more lines that we weren't before. So it definitely increased that side of the production.
Mm-hmm.
And all those machines for the most part are pretty modern. The other side, which is basically taking those cones and turning them into cards, we are in the process of modernizing since COVID hit.
Oh, okay.
But those machines are quite old, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Our engineer has helped put those machines together. And it dates back to the 90s.
Okay. All right.
So finding parts is not easy.
Yeah. Well, that gets to be it, doesn't it? That gets to be it. Everything breaks eventually, and if you can't get parts, then the downtime gets awful expensive. So,
yes.
Yeah, if you don't stay on top of it, you'll end up burning yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's – we've – these last couple months, we've spent a decent amount to update those machines and really modernize it. And it's been difficult, I got to say, you know, finding the parts because, you know, if you can't go out somewhere and find, you know, a part that's going to fit a Rainbow Gallery card and the exact back and forth that you need to fit that card. And so they were really custom made machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. You're not stamping out chunks of metal every day. So yeah, it's not like there's two manufacturers who are making it for a whole bunch of people. This is pretty specialized stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, is it fairly automated? I mean, is there a lot of electronic automation in this, or is it still pretty much turn on the or hook up the strands and turn on the switch and let it run?
Turn on the switch and let it run.
Okay.
We have a few machines that have multiple heads that can handle, you know, that, because we have some yarns that are more delicate and it can't handle the speed. So we have some machines that only have one head and they run at a slower speed so that the yarn doesn't rip.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other machines with five or six heads that are able to handle, you know, more of the torque.
Yeah.
And so some machines output five cards at a time and some machines only output one card at a time.
Okay. All right. So it's, and that's the thing I think people don't realize until you actually seek it out, the breadth of thread types and colors that Rainbow Gallery offers. It's almost frightening what you offer in terms of, and even stuff, you know, if you add in all the things you've discontinued, it's just a tremendous array of thread types that probably nobody else can match. I mean, that's the first time I really looked at it, it was like, holy smokes.
it can be overwhelming. When I first started working in the office, I was in over my head with all the different threads and all the different colors and what they do. And it's not just uniform. Some of them are for Santa's beard and some of them are for fur, and, you know, so it takes some time to really, really like get to know everything and get comfortable with it.
Yeah. And as a result, then warehousing is a significant part of your business, just simply tracking what you have and making sure you don't run out.
Yes. Yeah, so when we did our first inventory of after we took over, I was just flabbergasted because we literally take off every shelf, take all the cones off the shelves to count, to clean, but you know, you kind of get them off of the shelf and you really get to see how much you have. And you're just like, oh my God, there's minimums when it comes to buying some of this yarn. So
right.
If it's an off pink, you still have to buy X amount of pounds. And sometimes you get stuck with it for years.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's what I mean about when it comes to warehousing and management. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. Do we really want... Do we really want this many pounds of hot pink? Yes.
No. Exactly. Well, it's interesting too, because when we took over, there was also no inventory like management system.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually something that we took from Florida Paris and applied it to Rainbow Gallery. And now I have pretty good data on those threads, not only the sales, but, you know, what I should order, how much I should order, when I should order, stuff like that.
Yeah, because it really takes both sides, what we have in stock and what the sales are. And
yeah,
tracking that, yep. Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. In a regular manufacturing operation, you don't have to deal with 48 colors of one product. You might have two or three, where you guys have to not only have that large number of products, but then all the colors within. And
yeah, I mean, usually it's just a shirt and it comes in four different sizes and
right.
That's it. But with yarn, it's a whole nother animal.
That's a heck of an Excel spreadsheet right there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have sheets and sheets of colors and sales and, you know, every year and what's worth it and what's not worth it.
When it comes to new products, Do you have a general plan for trying to introduce X number of new threads in a year, or is that kind of a go with the flow approach?
So we usually, it's usually dictated by the trade shows, and it's pretty go with the flow. Sometimes we will take suggestions from the customer if they're really feel like, this line is missing a really good forest green or something like that. And then sometimes it'll be, one of our vendors telling us, "Hey, we just got this in. What do you think? You might like this. Play around with it. Tell me what you think."
So you get just some here's some things to try options then.
Yeah, because at a certain point, you don't want to just come out with stuff for the sake of coming out with stuff. And like we said, it can be almost overwhelming how many different threads we have. So we need to play this game of kind of making sure that if something isn't selling well, we discontinue it. And that way, if we add more colors or more lines, that it's not getting out of control.
Yeah. And that's got to be the tough spot, shutting down a line of threads when people have had them available and designers have used them. That must be a bit of a challenge to make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, we will still get inquiries about threads that have been discontinued 15 years ago. And I think part of that is just it might be in a stitch guide or, someone was doing a piece that they were just doing at the time. And as much as we would love to just have everything available for the customer, on a business side, sometimes it just doesn't make sense to bring in that color or that line anymore.
Then you shut it down, and then somebody decides to stitch an old design, and there's a demand for it. I'm sure you can't win.
We have the same issue on the Floor to Paris side with a hand painted design. The second we discontinue a piece and we sell out all the inventory, somebody wants, one piece, and you're like, "Well, I have minimums, and it takes me 3 years to sell four of these."
So, yep, it has to end. Well, that's just a tough part of the business, because at the other end, the designers I know always have to look and see when they spec threads, are they speccing something that's going to be available, or
Yeah, we get that all the time. I mean, designers, and I get it. You don't want to put up a yarn in your piece that's not going to be able to be available.
What is obviously you work closely with needlework shops. I mean that's your main customer. Do you have
Yes.
interaction with designers? Do you work with them to help them find the right colors and the right textures, or is
We
that
do.
okay?
We have always been more than willing to send yarn to the designer so that they can play with it. They can, get a whole ring from us of a line. And, for us, that's kind of advertising. It's giving it to the designers, letting them play with it and letting them use it. And then eventually, the consumer will buy it.
Yeah, because it really is kind of the roundabout way to get your product into the marketplace. If the designers use it, then there'll be the demand.
And so re our relationships with designers are very important for us.
Now, is that a group of people in your company who work with shops and designers to help them find what they're looking for? Or do you just rely on what's online and your catalogs for
So for many, many years, Sally was the person that really
that?
cultivated those relationships. And she just, as somebody who had a shop, as somebody who was a stitcher herself, she just knew it all. And so we were very lucky to be able to have her working with us and doing all of that for us.
One operation liaison person.
She did the job of three people. It was incredible.
And do you get what do you do? What is your role? Do you get involved in that end, or are you strictly monitoring manufacturing and inventory?
As long as Sally was here, I didn't get in her way. Just she was so good at it. There was no point in me. I mean, listen, I would involve myself to learn, but
Yeah.
at the day-to-day stuff, I mean, that was all her. And we would always have discussions, and as time went on and I got more accustomed to it, I would give in my input, but she was too good at it for me to disrupt it.
Just
My day-to-day is much more on the manufacturing side, the finance, vendor relations, stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, is Sally still with you, or did she retire?
Sally retired, but she is a consultant role for us. She does a lot of continues to do a lot of development of new colors, new lines, stuff like that.
Okay, so you didn't lose that value. That's good.
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it, even if I wanted to, I don't think Sally could just completely stop.
It's in her blood. She can't help it.
It's
Yeah.
yeah, and I'm grateful for it. I mean, we still talk every day almost, so.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and great for you too to have someone who knows the industry that well. That as you're figuring things out, you can lean on her and
Yeah, it's great, really. I use her really just when I need advice, and Sally and I over the years have gotten very close, so it's been great to have her still available. And I mean, sometimes we just talk about life, it's not even work. So
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what is stitching like in the company? Is it a majority of people stitch? Do we have needlework going on during breaks and lunch hours, or?
yes, we do. The saleswomen for Fleur de Paris are all avid stitchers, and so if we get a new piece, a new yarn, something to play with, we give it to them and say, hey, give us your feedback.
That's great. That's great. So stitching becomes part of their job. How many people wouldn't kill for that?
Yeah, no, it's nice to work here if you like to stitch.
Do we have them employees doing things in the evening? And I mean, does it go beyond that?
They like to stitch personally, but we don't really have them stitching when they go home for the company.
Right, but yeah, they do for their own. Yeah.
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 No, I mean they sometimes they'll I mean they won't buy it, but they'll buy a piece from us so they can go home and stitch it.
Right. Yeah. Perk of the job there. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And for a very long time, it's I wouldn't call it a prerequisite, but it helps if you are a stitcher when we're looking to hire people, because it's something that, it really helps to know the hobby.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm curious about it, because to just walk in and not know anything about needlework really kind of puts you behind understanding the product.
Yeah, it does. And if that's the case, which has been, we have a few people that didn't really needlepoint, we will have one of the girls kind of sit and teach the new hire, the basics of it, just so, 'cause you need to get an idea of what's a continental stitch, what is mesh, what is 13, what is 18. Like, you can't just do it without knowing anything.
And does your dad stitch too? I mean, how far into the family does the needlework go?
Yeah, my dad does stitch, or he did in the past. My dad is a very good artist, so I think he just has a little bit of creativity in him. So he, same thing for him. I mean, he had to learn how to stitch, and he enjoyed it and continued doing it. And it was something, I mean, same thing with me. When I started, I did a few pieces myself just to get it under my belt and be able to have knowledge of the actual process.
Yeah. How does your dad what, coming from Iran, you said it was?
Yes.
How does he even get started doing this?
It was really just kind of an opportunity thing for him. Him and his father met a few people that were either DMC or Zwagger, or even a few designers, and they said, hey, this could be an opportunity to sell needlepoint. It was more of a business thing, just, hey, there's a need for it, let's distribute it.
So strictly that, not some passing down of a love for needlework, but it was a business.
No.
Business that caught it. Because it's such a niche thing to come to the States and start up a needlework business is, I mean, for anyone, it would be a weird thing to do. And
not knowing a lot of English and, you know, being far from your family.
Yeah.
It was.
I mean, it's great. It, obviously smart enough to see a business opportunity and make the most of it. But then as you go along, then to take up the needlework itself is kind of a fun reversal of the normal pattern. So.
Yeah. And I had that same situation because when I took over Rainbow Gallery, I really didn't know much about, and now it sounds so crazy because it's such a mainstay, but I really didn't know much about Rainbow Gallery or their threads.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in this unique position of being a boss of a company and knowing only so much about that company.
Yeah. Yeah. And from what I hear in what you're saying, you were one of those rare people who's smart enough to shut up and listen. And
yeah, I was very much willing to, and I think due to my personality, really, I was willing to just kind of observe.
Yeah.
And learn as much as I could. I mean, Sally was a great teacher and she really showed me the ropes, but I just wanted to upgrade the certain things that I knew about. And so, for example, one of the first things we did was redo the website or, you know, update the price list as far as the look of it or certain things to kind of just bring the company into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a huge change because, for example, we didn't accept credit cards.
Oh.
So something as simple as that of just saying, hey, we're going to take credit cards now.
Okay.
And making that experience for the customer just that much easier.
Mm-hmm. So you found here's places I can contribute and over there, just stay out of the way but learn and just develop. Okay. Yeah.
Cause I always had, you know, a business mind and it was something that I gravitated towards. And I just said to myself, I'm going to find the low hanging fruit and I'm going to start there and slowly kind of make my way up to other things.
Uh-huh.
Once I'm comfortable knowing more about the thread or knowing more about the vendor, things like that.
Yeah. Do you feel like you can do any job in the company? I mean, are you at that level that you feel like you could just walk in one day and do a job if someone's not there?
Now I really do. And I've been forced to because Sally did so much.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely feel comfortable. I don't, you know, but I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, color comparison is my forte.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, short of actually getting on the machine and really quickly doing it. Yeah. I think I can do most of the stuff in this office.
You can get by anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just think that's admirable all the way around because in so many instances you hear of people who come in and really don't know what they're doing and try to dictate life to people and it all just breaks down and the culture of the company comes all apart. And because the way you went about it is the way that you usually find success. And so it just intrigues me. When in the magazine that I edit, we have an annual culture awards, we call it. And it's to recognize companies that build a culture of collaboration and where anyone at any level can have input and everybody wants to achieve the top level of efficiency in manufacturing. And we try to recognize that because there are just so many examples where that doesn't exist. And it sounds to me like you've taken the path where that you've allowed that culture, a positive culture, to develop. And as a result, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is, as a result, the product quality and the efficiency and profitability of the company goes up just because everybody is working together as a team, instead of cowering in a corner because they might make a mistake.
Yeah, and I'm really trying to push for that because it's so important. And I know that I can't just it first of all, I don't think it's how I operate, but I can't just dictate it and say, do it my way. And I have conversations with my production manager all the time, and I tell him, I say, you are in this warehouse 7, 8 hours a day. You see much more than I do. So I give you suggestions and I tell you what I see from my vantage point, but I'm well aware that your hands are in this for longer and deeper than mine might be. I'm just telling you this is what I think. Let's bounce ideas off each other.
Work
As
together.
opposed to just, because if I just say, hey, do this and do it that way, and he'll do it. I mean, at the end of the day, I sign his check and I'm his boss, but I'm not going to get the best out of that. So I don't, it doesn't serve me to operate that way.
No, it's yeah, so true. And the company will benefit all the way around because, yeah, you never know where an idea is going to come from that changes the game. And
Yeah, and I encourage my employees, if you have ideas or you have innovations, to please, come knock on my door. It's open.
So what are the new things? What are the new things this year? What can you tell us about what's coming up?
We have a new thread that we're coming out with soon. It's a spin-off of Silk LaMae, and it kind of happened by accident. It's basically a Silk LaMae ribbon. And we were tinkering with the machines that do our braiding, and it spit out a ribbon. And, Silk LaMae is one of our most popular lines. It comes in three different sizes. And we just figured, hey, why not?
Didn't even know the machine could do that, huh?
Yeah, we have an incredible engineer that runs all of our braiding machines, and he also repairs any of our card machines, and he is able to tinker with our braiding machines to the point that we had a machine and we wanted to change it to do something else. And we spoke to a representative of the manufacturer, and he said, you can't do that. It's impossible. And Ernesto said, I tried it. It worked. I did it. And this man was shocked. It was really funny. I mean, he came here and he's like, no, I don't think you can do that. And he Ernesto said, let me show you.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Outstanding.
So it's amazing what he can do. It's also scary how dependent I am on this man. But it's really it's I really do owe a lot of this to the employees here. Because, like I said, I came into this company, I knew nothing, and they really have all and they've all been working here for 10, 15, 20 years, so they're more Rainbow Gallery than me.
A lot of experience. Yeah. You have to honor that and respect it and take advantage of it. No question about it.
Yeah, and also take care of them. I mean, it's I'm very grateful for all the hard work that, especially now, I mean, we're working overtime. And so I'm grateful for their dedication to this business, to their craft, to the job.
Oh, that's great. Great to have that. It really is.
Yes.
So okay, so we got the surprise braid that nobody thought you could make. What else do we have new?
We're playing around with a few more colors to add to Glisten. We came out with a new thread last year called Eyelash. So we're going to add some more colors to that. And then also Rainbow Linen. We're bringing in a few more colors to add to that line.
Oh, okay.
And we're hoping that, springtime or maybe there will be a trade show by the fall that we can display these new items.
Yeah, we need a trade show, no question. We need
At
this.
least if we could just see the customers, see the vendors. I mean, it's been too long.
The when it comes to threads and colors, do you guys get involved with the Pantone color of the year and people who track color trends? Or how does that get determined? Is it just demand, hearing from designers, or do you also try to take a lead on that?
We'll try to take a lead, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But we also understand that the color of the year might not be what you need for your needlepoint canvas. So there's an aspect of dealing with the designers, seeing what the shops are asking for, kind of just looking at the lines and saying, this is missing. And then sometimes the mill saying, hey, this is a new dye or a new color that we've come out with. Like, what do you think? And we'll take a look at it. We'll stitch it on some canvas and we'll see how it comes out. And then sometimes, on the braiding side of things, we'll mix one metallic with another metallic and it might be the same silk, but it gives it a different color. And then, the combinations are important as well.
So, all right,
So,
so you're getting input. I mean, if your dyeing company is saying we've got a new dye, why don't you give it a try? You're really getting input from all quarters of your operation then.
absolutely. And it takes, they'll give us even sometimes three different shades, and we'll say, hey, we like this one more. Can you do this one? And so it's a lot of back and forth. I mean, we will decide on things almost a year out before we actually roll them out.
Well,
So
that's fun. So you don't get stuck in a rut then.
no, and it's important because, people always want something new. And so we kind of got to keep the customer happy. And it's also important for us to not get too out of hand and just always add stuff. So there's definitely a balance that we need to strike.
Little self-discipline every now and then doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, we just ran out of some Splendor that had poor sales, and we said, hey, this is an opportune time to discontinue about 10 colors so that, in the future, if we want to come out with new Splendor colors, it won't get too out of hand because there's too many colors.
What a fun business.
Yeah, it's funny because I very distinctly remember about 6 years ago sitting in my dad's office and not, I mean, look, it's a family business. Of course, I loved it, but I didn't love what I do. And now I look back and I'm like, I love this so much.
Oh, that's great. So talk about your own stitching. What painted canvas, charted canvas, what do you do?
Painted canvas. I won't lie, I don't do so much stitching just for leisure. If I stitch, it's for something particular. So, I've done like a tallest bag. I've done a few like cases, a couple sayings that I like, but I'm not going to pretend like I'm this person who loves to stitch and does it all
Okay.
the time.
So it's
But
more of a functional hobby for you then.
absolutely.
Well, That can work. That can work. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry to disappoint, but
yeah.
It's not something that I would say is, even though it probably should be in my blood, it's not necessarily in my blood.
That's okay. Nobody will hold that against you. You'll be
but
fine.
I will say the feeling of finishing a piece and that accomplishment truly makes you want to stitch more.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it really does. Yep. Well, Daniel, I sure have enjoyed it. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me on.
A lot of fun, a little insight into the company. So we appreciate that.
Of course.
Yep. And thanks to everybody for listening.